here to hear your questions and get your feedback and comments. And I know that sometimes, you know, when the film is over, now you had the lights, so it's not as bad, but it's a bit like coming out of a dream, or for some people, of a kind of nightmare. So, yes. So it's a challenge to answer this question in a reasonable amount of time. It was really a work in progress that was not meant to be such a big one. I had the film at first was supposed to be like integrate testimonies and interviews with old telephone operators, like fantastic women I had met, and also current telephone operators who were active in their union. There was supposed even to be some scenes that I would shoot with actors and some archival films. Now the historical service of Bell Canada in Montreal had told me that perhaps I would find from 6 to 7 films with telephone operators in them. And the film was started as a final project for my BA in Communication Studies at Concordia University in Montreal, and that was in 96. And at the last minute, you know, like few months, well, maybe in February, and the film was supposed to be finished that year, Bell Canada phoned me up and they said, "We're so sorry, but we forgot. We just sent our collection of films to the National Archives of Canada, so all the material is there. And we're sorry, but I was supposed to do optical printing of their original films and make my film in film. And when I phoned up Ottawa, they told me that they could only give me tapes. And so I decided I would make my film on video. And one thing led to another, and I could never finish my student film. And then my profs felt that I should just, you know, do my MA and do more research, and that's what I did. But it was a project outside of school too, and I got money from the Canada Council and from the Quebec Council, and it kind of became a larger project until Bell Canada decided to get rid of its operator services in 99. So I started making another film with the real operators. And when this was over, it became a film that was produced by the National Film Board of Canada. And, you know, that was more like a public intervention, a film that was 52 minutes long, made to be on television with, you know, these women I admire greatly and who always inspired me. But when I went back to my archival films, I really sensed that, you know, those films were the phantoms of these women that I had seen kind of disappearing. And I started editing the film with some excerpts of perhaps 50 films, and I felt that I had been really zealous finding these films, doing extra research and finding, you know, the copyright holders and the donators for each and every film. A good part of the collection came from AT&T and Bell Canada, and some from the Prelinger Archive, so that was kind of less of a detective work to do to track down all those films. And we started editing the film. My model, of course, was Atomic Cafe, that I'm sure you know. And we sensed that we didn't have enough material to make the film I was trying to make. So I went back to do more research, and I finished my NFB film, and we went back to do some editing, and I ended up spending a lot of time by myself. I learned to edit on Avid and try to encode the material since I had not shot it, and, you know, do a crazy cataloging system with all sorts of columns and notes, and I had chosen still, for each clip, I had like some 1,500 clips, and I really worked with those films. And after a few weeks, a really good documentary editor came to meet me, and we started like putting cards on boards, and the film sort of grew out of there. But overall, I've been, you know, like, I've been in the editing room for 50 weeks over 4 years and a half. So that includes, you know, looking at the material, digitizing, and then doing the assembly and all those stages of editing. So that's basically the process. I think I was able to capture it, but there's all sort of drawers and stories, and I did some historical findings, like Believe It or Not, and that was really fun. So I learned it all, but by phoning up archivists and people like that. Yes? It was a total feedback process. I came in the editing room with a very clear idea of what I was going to do, and I had also written some kind of script of the first act of the film, transcribing every film that I had, like in the initial stages. I'm kind of faithful to my original intentions, although the film has greatly shifted and changed, and after a while I felt like, you know, I should be listening, like paying attention to the films and let them guide me, and you know, like I felt that I was, that's a metaphor, I was not working with found footage, but I was like the found director of this footage, and I became to realize that the real story that was at stake was how telephone operators were in fact created and manufactured, not only through scientific management but also through a kind of image management, you know, that was also that came through the slogan of The Voice with a Smile, but also, you know, through all those corporate films, training films, recruitment films. And I think that, you know, the operators were really, you know, those women, like, the film is more about the making of the operators, and that's what kind of listening to the material, listening to those films as if they were the characters of my film, that's what, you know, led me to create. So that's where the narrative came from. But, of course, also working with the narration, things kept on shifting. Yes, but that's the key question. It's a feedback. Other questions, comments?
Holmes Martineau, please explain.
Oh, that's another beautiful link of the evening. I did work with this 1928 musical instrument called the Onde Martineau. The Onde Martineau was invented by this Frenchman, Maurice Martineau. It started at the same time as the theremin that you must know about. And the Onde Martineau, the last versions have a keyboard and a ring and the high notes that you hear, and a lot of the sound effects came from this musical instrument. I worked with Ondiste, who learned with the inventor in Paris in the early 60s, and she really, you know, she really, I think, pushed the film to another level and allowed the film to have a kind of a unifying atmosphere and mood. And what's kind of lovely is that Onde Martineau is the musical instrument that is closest to the human voice, and it's also a musical instrument that is on the verge of extinction. So it made sense, and it was invented when Maurice Martineau worked in the First World War, and he would hear the sounds that the light bulbs and the radios were making. So there was this telecommunication link as well. So that's what I can say. But my next movie will reveal all about the Onde Martineau. So I'm making this film because I've been asked all those questions. I felt like this should be shown, and I think the material that Julie and I showed was like, oh wow.
So. As far as time and chronology goes, I was going to ask you. It looked like a lot of the later footage, the color footage, was from the 60s and the 70s. Could you give me like a ballpark cutoff date, like a ballpark year, as to like what you think the latest footage was on that?
The latest footage in my film? And the color footage is 1992. I have like one video image, basically, and it was made by Bell Canada, their multi-visual production center, and it was a film called Network 2000. So it's this image of the globe with the kind of squares, and we've kind of transformed it so that it doesn't look like... it was a film that was really very much like Tron, you know, the film.
Yeah.
And so that's the latest film I have. Most of the other films come from the very late 70s, and they were informed by 2001, like all those corporate filmmakers were fans of Kubrick, I'm sure, and they, you know, they used the, they had like really high budget, and they try to imitate 2001. It came from Crawley Films in Canada, one of the longest, the longest running private filmmaking company, with Budge Crawley, that maybe you know about.
Can you tell us how you selected the narrator? Did you try any other narrator before the one you settled
on? Yeah, before I finished to write the narration, I tried different voices, and I tried an older woman's voice. I tried my voice. I tried a real operator's voice, a woman who was in my other film. I only regret not having tried a young woman's voice. I think it would have made for a more perverse story. But that's really how I chose her. I don't know what you think of it, but, you know. Some people think she's seductive. Some people think she's like old and dark. And people are very sensitive to voices and narration. And that's, you know, people react to the film basically how they react to the quality of the voice and the narration. So some people love it, some people don't. But that's the only one that really worked, I think. Other comments? You're good for sticking around so long.